the biggest thing for me was like realizing, man, there's so much of a learning curve of just how to market myself and how to brand myself so that I can become successful on my own and so that I can connect with other musicians.
This is Max Q, a podcast by Peabody's Launchpad office dedicated to demystifying what life is like after graduation. Every episode, we sit down with a recent Peabody alum to get their take on what life is like for a working artist in today's world. Jobs, work-life balance, finances, time management, we discuss that and more on the Max Q podcast.
Hi, everyone. I'm Christina Mancior. Today's interview is with a special guest, Chris Johnson, who graduated from Michigan State University in 2007 with a master's degree in jazz studies. He has since toured with the legendary Count Basie Orchestra, appeared on 5 Grammy-nominated albums, and served as director of jazz studies at the University of Utah. Chris is currently a freelance composer, trumpeter, and educator based in Detroit, Michigan. I'm wondering if we could get started. Could you just tell us what your life looks like right now?
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. Really appreciate it. Right now, I am working as a freelance composer, performer, and educator. Most of my freelance composing consists of some commission projects for various ensembles, whether it be orchestra, big band, wind ensemble, etc. Actually just finished up a musical, working as the one of the co-composers and co-lyricists for a musical. I'm also, of course, releasing a lot of my own projects. As a freelance performer, I'm not really doing much touring, but the little bit of touring I am doing are, you know, things with more personal projects. Whereas before, I was touring with the Count Basie Orchestra. Right now, I'm really focused on my own, you know, personal pet projects. As an educator, I'm working freelance. So I am doing a residency at Troy High School here in Michigan. In addition to that, I'm also doing Skype lessons as well as in-person lessons, master classes at various schools, and I'm an artist in residence at the University of Utah, where I'm going in 4 times during this academic year to do master classes and performances with the students.
Great. Could you tell me a little bit about how you got to where you are now?
It's a very long road, but yes, I can definitely do that. I went to Southfield Lathrop High School. And when I was there, I participated in all the bands and orchestras there, as well as participating in the Detroit Symphony Orchestra's Civic Youth Ensembles. I did a summer program where I played in the orchestra and then later joined the first season of the Civic Jazz Orchestra under the direction of Marcus Belgrave. From there, I ended up going on to Michigan State University, and I got both my bachelor's and my master's from Michigan State. My bachelor's degree was in jazz studies, and my master's degree was in a combination of jazz studies and composition. Right after grad school, I was very fortunate to join the Count Basie Orchestra. I made the connection through my trumpet professor at the time, Derek Gardner. They had an opening, they needed somebody, and he recommended me, and I ended up going on a 6-week tour as my audition. Through that 6-week tour, I ended up staying with the band for about 11 years on and off, touring around the world, recording on Grammy-nominated albums, as well as doing some writing. I was able to do some arranging on a couple of different projects, both live and recorded. And I've had my hand in a lot of different pots in the educational system, you know, doing different residencies at high schools and things of that nature. I also had a position at Ohio State University where I was a senior lecturer in jazz, as well as being director of jazz studies at the University of Utah for 4 years.
Could you share some of the tricks that you have to stay organized, and how did you balance your time when you had so many different commitments to keep track of?
Yes, so many different things to keep track of, especially during the time in which you've known me. I mean, just always some sort of project happening, whether it's a recording, film score, et cetera. I think the important part is definitely to take advantage of technology. You know, if you're more of an analog person, it's fine to have notebooks, but writing down your ideas is important. For me personally, I've really taken advantage of just something as simple as the Notes app that exists on my computer, on my Mac computer, and my iPhone, iPad, et cetera. When I get an idea, I take the time to, you know, write the idea down and really just allow myself to just kind of like spew out a bunch of ideas. Like, okay, I'm thinking this, these are the tasks that are necessary, et cetera. And then from there, start creating bullet points of, you know, okay, within this one category, what are all the tasks that need to get done? How do I actually implement this particular thought that I have? So I think as artists, sometimes we're really good at coming up with ideas, but the follow through and execution can be difficult. So I think it's important to allow ourselves to dream first, and then I put on my administrative hat and think, okay, now that I have this great idea, what are the steps that I need to take to actually, bring this into fruition? From there, if I am working with a team, I love tools like Slack. I think I'm running about 4 different Slack accounts right now, all with different tasks and different categories, so I can keep organized with my team. So I think it's really just about strong communication, setting goals and deadlines. And really, I kind of have this split personality happening where I'm one part artist, one part administrative. And that's really important. And honestly, a third part as like an editor or a copyist too, so that I'm thinking about the tasks I need to get done and actually writing them down and making them tangible.
Where did you gain those skills as the administrator, as the editor, the things outside of your artistic pieces? Was that something that you worked on in school, or was it something that you developed later?
I think a lot of it comes from the fact that my dad was a superintendent for General Motors and was in charge of a lot of people. And so I just kind of watched him be very task driven and very, very organized in that way. And then my mom is a school teacher. So I think growing up, I kind of had 2 really great examples of, you know, of how to go about doing that. And then when I was in school, I don't know, I was just kind of always that person that people came to like study music theory or talk about different things. We were, you know, kind of tutoring and balancing it. It part of it just came from being really, really busy. So I remember freshman year of college, I was in a brass quintet, jazz combo, jazz octet, jazz band 1, jazz band 2, and concert band, all in my first semester of school. And it was just like, wait, what? Like, what's happening? And I was taking jazz and classical trumpet lessons.
A few things.
Yeah.
Staying busy.
Just a few things. And so the problem that I ran into was it was just too much for me to manage, but I'm actually really glad that I did that, because what I found was that over time, I was able to kind of really be able to refocus myself, and I had to make lists and I had to prioritize and I had to like multitask. And I ended up learning that skill at a pretty early age. I think at a time where everybody was like out partying, I was like, I can't party. I have to like study for this test and practice for this. And so I really started like thinking about like working smarter instead of working harder. And and I would work pretty hard too, but just during that time it helped. And then also for grad school, I was a graduate assistant for the jazz studies department. And so I was dealing with a situation where I was really having to organize a lot of events, organize a lot of student opinions, organize a lot of professor opinions, and put it together in a way in which people could kind of like could deal. Became a band leader, and like every gig that I played and every recording that I organized, I don't know, I just kind of kept putting myself in the situation where even if I didn't know how to do it, I was challenged with having to figure it out. And the common denominator was just like, are you organized? And if you're not organized, then I couldn't achieve it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It sounds like you just threw yourself into situations where it forced you to learn.
Constantly. And then what I noticed is once people found out I had that skill, because, you know, a lot of artists, you know, it's struggle with having an administrative brain. But the more that I found that I was good at that sort of thing, I kept getting put in more and more situations and being asked to do certain things. You know, there's a big difference between, you know, being on tour and being one of the performing members of the group, but then also on top of that, having to do arrangements or taking on any sort of administrative role is like a whole other hat that sometimes someone who's not performing will take on.
What surprises you most about life after graduation, now having been in the workforce for some amount of time?
Yeah. I mean, it's so funny when I think about how much longer I've been you know, working than I was in school. I was in school for 6 years. I graduated in 2007. So it's like, I've been out of school for more than double the amount of time that I've been in school. The thing that surprised me the most right out the gate was that this idea that I am an entrepreneur, I am a business, I am a brand. And I knew nothing about business. I knew nothing about being an entrepreneur. I knew nothing about branding and marketing. The thing that I didn't get is that, you know, I mean, it kind of happened to me and I'm rare in that, you know, I got a call from the bass band and joined the bass band. I mean, we're talking about like, that's like some old fashioned stuff that doesn't always happen to people. And even that, like I couldn't solely survive off the bass band, but that's like, you know, the old stories of, yeah, well then, you know, Miles Davis moved to New York and then he joined Charlie Parker's band. Like that just like doesn't always happen like that. It does for some people, it depends. But the biggest thing for me was like realizing, man, there's so much of a learning curve of just how to market myself and how to brand myself so that I can become successful on my own and so that I can connect with other musicians. So many non-musical things. And then also musically, this idea of being versatile is very, very crucial. And I feel like, I don't want to say it was neglected in my education because my education was very purposely focused. They very purposely focused us on something, but it took me a minute to realize, okay, I can't have that type of focus when I graduate. I have to take that focus and apply it to other genres and to other styles and try out different things so that I can have a successful career.
Along those lines, what advice would you have to current students or folks that have recently graduated?
I think it's really key to study branding and to study marketing and realize that there's like a million things you can find between Google and YouTube. And then also too, there's a lot of people selling courses, affordable courses on just general principles on like, okay, if I want to sell a product, if I want to generate income, what are my active and my passive streams of income? Active meaning like, how am I going to get gigs? How am I going to like teach lessons, provide services? What are my passive streams of income, which might be, you know, having an album out, selling buttons, selling t-shirts, selling an online course. But I think having an understanding of how do customers arrive to buy something and really studying the resources that are out there to understand, you know, look up what a sales funnel is, understand the importance of an email list, understand how to build up a social media following. And it's just a matter of study. Once you recognize that it's important, you start studying it. And it might take you years to implement it, and that's okay. But just start to study things within business and also get mentored by musicians who are not in the academic scene. One of the challenges are there, you know, obviously a ton of very savvy professors that are, you know, in institutions, but understand that the advice that you get from someone who's in academia is going to be drastically different than advice that you get for someone who's freelancing. And if your aim is to freelance, you also really need to get advice from people who are freelancing full time because their taxes look different. Their website looks different. Their business looks different. They don't have access to a lot of the same resources. And their hustle is a little bit different, or their hustle is a lot of bit different than that of somebody in the educational system. You know, so I think a really important subject that I didn't fully understand until I started experiencing it was not only the importance of mentorship, but also understanding how organic and natural of a process it is. I tell this story often of the first time I went to New York City. My brother had an internship at Citibank, which he ended up working at later. But anyway, my dad and I drove him out to New York and moved all his stuff in for the summer. And, you know, I was really into playing music. So my dad said, hey, you know, what music do you want to see? He hands me a copy of the Village Voice. And he's like, just name it. We'll go see some musicians perform. So I saw a performance. Roy Hargrove was performing at the Knitting Factory doing a tribute to Louis Armstrong. We go, we're blown away by the performance. And Roy Hargrove was just phenomenal. And in addition to that, Wyclef Gordon was playing trombone. And he was just like insane, just this monster trombone player, singing, all that. He actually, to me, stole the show in a lot of ways. After the performance was over, you know, we saw Rhea Hargrove kind of like walking towards backstage, and my dad started pushing me. He's like, man, you got to go talk to Rhea Hargrove. Go talk to Rhea Hargrove. And I was like, man, come on, Dad. Rhea Hargrove doesn't want to talk to me. He's like, when on earth are you ever going to see Rhea Hargrove again? If it's somebody that you really like, you know, you got to go talk to him. You got to do it. So I'm like, okay, Dad, I want to do it. And I go up to shake his hand. I'm like, Mr. Hargrove, I really enjoyed your performance. He walked right past me. Roy didn't want anything to do with me in that moment. And I understand years later, like sometimes you're really busy. You don't necessarily always have time to stop and talk to people. He probably had to play another set. He might run to another gig. Who knows? Roy was not interested in talking to me. So I run back to my dad with my tail between my legs. And then he's like, we see Wyclef Gordon hailing a cab outside. And he's like, man, all right, go talk to Wyclef. You got to go say hi. I was like, Dad, he's catching a cab. Wyclef doesn't want to see me. And he's like, and this is actually a hilarious statement. Once again, when on earth are you ever going to get this opportunity to talk to Wyclef Gordon again? Which is hilarious because now he's like a great friend and I work for him. I'm like his copyist. I do stuff for him. I just got back from doing a performance in Georgia with him. Anyway, I go up to Wyclef and I'm like, Mr. Gordon, my name is Chris Johnson. I'm a trumpet player from Detroit and I just had to meet you. And he's like, oh, Chris, Detroit. I love Detroit. Marcus Belgrave, you know, wonderful. Hey, I got to catch a cab and head to the Village Vanguard for a gig, but I want to be able to talk to you. Here's my card. Call me tomorrow.
Oh, that's amazing.
Now, at the time, I was like, he's just being nice. It's probably a false number. Why would he care? But I can relate to that so much as a musician because he did that. And I called him. I called him the next day and we talked and he invited us out to the Village Vanguard. And we went and we saw an amazing set with him and Eric Reed. But because he did that, I became the same way as a high schooler if there was a freshman. If there was someone in middle school, if there was anyone who cared about music and looked up to me in any way, I wanted to make myself available to them the way that Wyclef Gordon made himself available to me. I wanted to be, my high school band director was Damian Crutcher. I wanted to be the Damian Crutcher to anyone who wanted to learn from me. Like, it's actually a very natural thing. It's a very nurturing thing because these musicians were looked out for by somebody at some time. So I think in terms of mentorship and networking, what I want people to keep in mind is that if the person is an educator and is a nurturer and is someone who wants to serve as a mentor, if you reach out to them, if they have the time, and not all of them will, not all of them will be interested, but the ones that do, if you reach out, we as professional musicians want to mentor. We want to look out for people. We want to show people like the way. We want to like help the next generation because it was done for us. And in some cases, there are probably some areas that weren't done for us. And there's some areas where we're like, man, I wish I had somebody tell me X, Y, Z. But I'll never forget that. I would email Wyclef from time to time and ask him questions. And I got Eric Reed's information too when I saw him perform. And I would email Eric Reed and he would respond to me. And to this day, like if I see him, we remember each other. We've played, you know, one gig together, down in San Antonio. And since then, we always just stay in touch. And it's like, that's important to myself. It's important to the people above, you know, above my generation. And I say we just keep passing that torch on. So we live in a time where like everybody's super accessible. Most people are managing their own Instagram accounts, you know, like maybe not Jay-Z, but like, you know, like your most of your like, you know, musicians that you look up to probably will answer you. And if they don't, the next one might. You know, so I'd say there's strength in numbers of reaching out to people. And also don't, you know, I think genuine networking is, hey, I want you to introduce myself. I'm a big fan. From time to time, if I could ask you some professional questions, I'd appreciate it, but just want to just show love. That's genuine. What's not genuine is, hey, I'm such and such. Can you put me on a gig? That's just, to me, it's like, I'm just not interested. The other thing is, the other thing when reaching out, my pet peeve, because I'm always responding, I take a lot of time to respond to whatever messages I get. A pet peeve that I have though, is if a student asks for a resource, I give them some advice, give them some information, and I get hit with the, man, that sounds like a lot of work, or I'm not really trying to do that right now, or okay, I took the information, now I'm going to ask you a million more questions when I didn't even take the initiative to follow through with the steps that you already showed me. So I think it's really key, like if, man, back in the day, I was really lucky if I could get 5 minutes of Marcus Belgrave's time. When he was really busy, he'd be on a performance, but he'd take the time to talk to me, but he might talk to me for 5 minutes. I would take whatever he told me in those 5 minutes and practice it for like a month. And then the next time I came back, I'm like, hey, man, remember that thing you showed me? And I'd play it for him. And then he'd show me more and maybe even give me a little bit more time. But sometimes I run across these students where it's like, man, I just gave you a free piece of advice. I'm not asking for anything because I want to invest in you. But then you're coming back and it's like we never talked. You're moving on to the next thing, and you didn't really value the lesson that I showed you. So I think that's really key. If you're going to network, if you're going to be mentored, listen to your mentors, be respectful of their time. Don't waste your time. Don't waste their time.
So with all the freelance work and the different pieces of the portfolio career you've built here in Detroit, how does technology play a role in that with either promotion or with the different kinds of work, teaching, online work that you're doing?
I believe that technology will be the great equalizer of people that are future-proofed or people that will rely on those who are future-proofed in order to make their income. Of course, you always have the option of outsourcing, you know, whether it become like album artwork or recording your project, mixing, mastering, designing your website, building up your social media following, creating an online course. You can always outsource for sure. That's always an option. But honestly, in terms of maximizing profits, even if I'm outsourcing, knowing how to do everything that I'm outsourcing, at least at a basic level, to me is really important. So let's say, for example, I've done enough video work on my own where I'm shooting the video, I'm editing the video, I'm dealing with all of that, and my shooting may not look great, but I know how to edit together. I know how to put together a compelling story. Now I can actually save myself hours of someone's fee by saying, hey, I just need you to show up, bring your camera and shoot this particular thing and then give me the raw footage. That's what I'm paying you for. And then I can open Adobe Premiere and bring it in and edit it. I can save myself a lot of time when I go into a studio because I know Logic Pro really well. I understand the recording process. I understand multi-tracking and say, hey, I want to use your mics. I want to use your compressors. I want to do all that. But when we record this, I want you to just provide me with the session or with a bounce down of the session. No mixing, no mastering. I can take care of that. And I can do all my own editing together because I've done that before. And then the thing that I'm still kind of like, okay, I'll outsource my mixing and mastering, but all the editing's done. So I'm just paying that person for the final product. So whether you're a one-stop shop or whether you are doing some outsourcing, having a knowledge of the different types of things that you're hiring someone to do will definitely save you a lot of money. The other thing is there's just so many revenue streams that are available, through technology. Right now, a major thing, you know, at the time that we're recording this, the coronavirus has hit the country in a very heavy way. And one of the areas that I see a lot of people scrambling to get together is like, well, school's out and people are losing income. People who have private studios are having to switch to an online platform. I feel very fortunate that I'm already set up with a great camera, a great microphone set up. My technology is in a place where I'm able to actually deliver online content to students that I can do remotely without having, you know, to deal with. It doesn't hit me quite as hard as it might hit others in terms of being prepared to move to a digital platform. So creating an online course and things of that nature, there's just so many things that we can study and be a part of that end up becoming either active or passive revenue streams that I think it's really important to study right now. Also, from an artistic standpoint, a lot of that is kind of dealing with business. From an artistic standpoint, my composing and arranging completely and totally changed as I incorporated different pieces of technology. When I first started writing, you know, I'm sitting on the piano and I'm doing pencil and paper. Quickly into college, I got into Finale. I started working with that program and really became like a power user of that program. And then after grad school, I got into MIDI controllers and started working with GarageBand. And then I graduated to Logic. And then I started getting into film scoring. Then I started getting into sample libraries and having different instruments available. My writing changed as each one of those things hit because certain things became easier. My workflow became faster. And also my creativity could explode in different ways as I had different technological resources available. So even when I'm creating acoustic music, I'm still leaning very heavy on technology to create that because I can hear I can hear and see and shape ideas differently when I have those resources available.
Thanks so much, Chris.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Any other last tidbits before we sign off?
Don't try to do all of these things at once. Keep in mind that, you know, to give you some insight, I graduated from high school in 2001. So the things that were pretty much the whole history that we're talking about is like in the last 19 years, I've taken the time to study marketing, to study music, to study technology, composition, film score, all these things that I listed. It's not like I just set out and did all those things at once. It literally was one thing at a time, something, sometimes five things at a time. Sometimes one of those five things at a time wouldn't come back until much later. Like, take your time, but make a list. And I used to always tell my students what I would do when I was in college. I remember sometimes we'd have a master class and somebody would do something, would talk about something that I just didn't understand. And so I'd say, okay, I don't understand what they're talking about. Like, for example, Ron Blake one time said, oh yeah, well, when you're playing over a dominant chord, you can go up a half step and play a Kansas City scale and it'll give you an altered sound. I was like, first of all, what's an altered sound? Second of all, what's a Kansas City scale? So I remember I just wrote down dominant chord, up a half step, Kansas City scale, ? And then like maybe a few months later, I learned the Kansas City scale in a jazz improv class. I was like, oh, okay. I still don't know why I would do that over a dominant chord. And I'd probably say years later, I learned what the altered scale was. And then years later, I put two and two together that, oh man, that altered scale is very similar to the Kansas City scale up a half step from a dominant chord. Now, if I hadn't written down a note with a question mark saying, I don't get this, research this more, then I probably would have forgot what he had talked about. But the idea is that we go through these like different stages of mastery. I actually have a video out that talks about different stages of mastery. Maybe we can link that in the podcast.
Yeah, we can. We have a space where we can plug anything that you wanna.
Awesome. Yeah. And if anybody's ever interested in learning more information, both about music in terms of music, also technology, advice, things like that, you can go to my website, chrisjohnsonmusic.com, where you can find out more information about me as well as enroll in one of my courses that I currently have available called Office Hours with Chris Johnson.
Great. Thank you so much, Chris. I'll talk to you soon.
You can find Chris's video, The Four Stages of Mastery, linked in the podcast notes. And you can learn more about Chris and his current projects at his website, chrisjohnsonmusic.com. Thanks for listening.
Theme music for the Max Hugh podcast composed by Vincent Fasano.